crisis in our listening area, please join us for the Kingfisher Project Wednesday evening at 6:30, right here on Radio Catskill.
It is Wednesday evening. It is 6:30. That means it's time for the local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. We've got something different, something special for you here on the local edition tonight. It's the return of the Kingfisher Project, and we've got somebody special that'll explain exactly what that means. But coming up, we've got Bill Williams and his guest be conducting this interview live on air here on the local edition as part of the Kingfisher Project. So stay tuned. That's what we've got, and it's going to start right now.
Welcome to the Kingfisher Project, information and awareness about the heroin and opiate epidemic. I'm Julie Pizzol. The Kingfisher Project began in memory of my daughter, Rebecca Jean Pizzol, who was shot and killed due to her heroin addiction. At her memorial service, her former teacher, Mr. Okazalik, read an essay she wrote. It was about a bird, an injured kingfisher bird that she found and rescued when everyone else had given up on the bird. In that spirit, our community came together and formed the Kingfisher Project. Since 2014, we have been raising awareness about the drug and opiate crisis in our listening area and around the country, right here on Radio Catskill. Here is Bill Williams.
Thanks, Julie. My guest tonight is my friend and a genuine source of inspiration, Stephanie Campbell. Stephanie joined Friends of Recovery New York, FOR New York, in 2015, and worked at the state and national levels to humanize, organize, and mobilize the recovery movement by reducing stigma, advocating for changes in public policy, and promoting a culture of recovery. In October 2018, Stephanie began serving as the director of the Independent Office of the New York State Behavioral Health Ombudsman Program to oversee the implementation of a new statewide initiative designed to ensure that New Yorkers access their insurance coverage for substance use and mental health services. She is also an adjunct professor at New York Silver School of Social Work. Listeners might want to keep something to write with at hand as our discussion moves ahead. Stephanie will most likely have some information you'd like to make note of. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thanks, Bill. Good to be here.
Right off the bat, what is an ombudsman? Tell us what you do.
Well, it's a word that took me a little while to learn how to say. So what an ombudsman does is essentially an enforcer, right? That's what the word itself means. So I have been lovingly dubbed the pit bull of OASIS and by other of my friends at other state agencies. And what I do is I really work with our partners on both the state level and with our partners on the CHAMP project to really help folks access care. I can go a little bit more into sort of the history of how this office came into being, if you'd like, or you can ask me.
Sure, please do. Please do.
So, this work started while I was the executive director at Friends of Recovery New York. What we saw happening was there were an enormous number of changes that OASIS our friends in the executive office, as well as our friends at DFS and DOH, recognized that there were some changes that needed to be made to the insurance law. And so there were lots of changes that happened, right? We ended, prior auth for you know, bedded treatment and access to medication-assisted treatment. We changed utilization requirements in response to the opioid crisis. And all of this was built upon, you know, the Affordable Care Act, which expanded parity and essential health benefits, as well as the Federal Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. And then, of course, in New York, there was, in 2006, you know, Timothy's Law, which really established, you know, the mental health parity issue. So there were other changes that happened in 2016. You know, there was a designated tool called the locator used to designate the appropriate level of care. In 2019, New York had updated, you know, requirements for medication-assisted treatment and inpatient and outpatient prior approval and concurrent review, as well as copay requirements and getting adolescents access to mental health inpatients. Lots more has happened. But what we realized was that despite all of these changes, we were still getting desperate pleas from parents and family members and loved ones, you know, about their loved ones who are not getting access to care. And so in 2018, through advocacy that was done, you know, by Friends of Recovery New York and Legal Action Center and the New York State Council, the New York State Legislature created the statewide ombudsman program to really help consumers and providers access their health insurance coverage for substance use and mental health services. And, you know, I oversee the office with my colleagues at OASIS and in consultation with OMH, which is the Office of Mental Health. And we created a, you know, a statewide program with a helpline, which I'll give to your listeners, and also an email address. But really what we try to do is to, you know, work from a hub and spokes model approach. So we have specialists, including our friends at Legal Action Center and the New York State Council for Community Behavioral Health, as well as Medicare Rights Center. And then we have a number of community-based organizations around the state who are working in region to really help folks access care. And that includes, you know, Adirondack Health Institute, the Community Action of Staten Island, Family and Children's Association down in Long Island, Family Counseling Services of Cortland County, and Save the Michaels of the World out in Western New York. And we help, you know, all payers as well as uninsured and regardless of age and immigration status.
You've mentioned OASIS several times. It's an acronym, and actually it's one that changed its name. Could you tell us, because I think it's important for people to know what the name was and what it is now.
Well, it was the Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services, and it is now the Office of Addiction Services and Supports. And, you know, we know that language matters. And, you know, for years, we have been, those of us in recovery, and though you know my story, you know, I'm a person in, you know, long-term recovery, started my journey at 20 and, you know, understand firsthand the impact of stigma of our population and the shame and embarrassment and humiliation that leads to, you know, these negative public perceptions about people like me. And so we really wanted to change the language of abuse, because abuse really conveys, you know, that the person who is using substances to really, in many ways, you know, address the underlying pain of anxiety for many of us, depression, PTSD, you know, and other, you know, what we call dis-ease, right, with substances, that abuse sort of, you know, conveys that it's the person's fault, right? It's kind of a blaming the victim mentality, as opposed to recognizing that substance use disorder is a medically recognized condition. It's a chronic condition. And we need to, you know, treat the people who have this condition with respect and dignity. And so, you know, advocates and, you know, both inside the agency and outside the agency work together to, you know, come up with a name that would really, you know, really convey the mission and vision of the agency. And so the name was changed to the New York State Office of Addiction Services and Supports. And that includes the full continuum, prevention, treatment, and recovery. Recovery is now a, you know, part of our lexicon in terms of addressing substance use disorder. And so that our new title really conveys, you know, what that means.
Well, thank you for that. What have been your challenges in the past year, especially due to COVID?
Well, I think all of us have, you know, been incredibly impacted by COVID. And I often talk about, you know, COVID as, you know, the impact on our community has been so compounded because of the isolation that we've all experienced, right? So, for example, you know, even individuals who did not have a propensity, you know, were not sort of, you know, in active use before COVID hit, you know, what we call naive drug users, people who were, you know, recreationally using or using, you know, to stress, you know, relieve stress, started to use in ways that unfortunately led to increases in overdose, as well as the drug supply across, you know, all drugs really, you know, being contaminated by fentanyl. And so the isolation that people have experienced, the loss of, you know, we often say that addiction and suicide, these are diseases of despair, right? So these diseases of despair have led to increases in overdose rates. And then when you think about the ways in which the portals have closed down, so, for example, in New York State, we were able to, you know, continue, you know, offering services through telehealth. You know, we were able to work with our partners at, you know, the Department of Financial Services, DFS, that, you know, really expanded, you know, access to telehealth, and in particular provided, you know, guidance to insurance as to the requirements for coverage for telehealth services, and really prohibited insurers from imposing cost sharing on telehealth services during, you know, the state of emergency. And, you know, really, we were able to, you know, allow individuals, you know, to use both video and telephonic telehealth, which was really important, especially for those individuals who have limited internet, you know, and so that really helped, you know, help folks access care. But also when we think about the financial, you know, stress that's been caused by COVID, many folks have, you know, have lost or have reduced hours of work. And so the financial stress has also impacted us during COVID. So being able to, you know, to get folks access to, you know, to behavioral health services for both on the mental health side and the substance use side has been really helpful for our community. We were able to, in 2020, the legislature and the executive really strengthened DFS's and DOH's ability to enforce compliance with behavioral health parity provisions that were set in the 2020 budget. So those are, and we were also able, and we've been doing working on this for years in the recovery community, trying to get folks access to, you know, medication-assisted treatment to support their recovery. We know that the gold standard, you know, of care is for opioid use disorder, for example, is methadone, as well as buprenorphine and naltrexone, the three FDA-approved drugs to treat opioid use disorder. And we were able to work with the federal government to get folks, you know, up to a 14-day supply of methadone, take home. There's home delivery in certain parts of the state for methadone, as well as to be able to get folks assessed for medication-assisted treatment through telehealth and allow them to get that, you know, get buprenorphine through their doctors. So that's you know, major changes that have happened, you know, both, you know, as a result of need, right? And there's been a major push with at Oasis to make sure that, you know, services were not disrupted, that folks were able to still get access to inpatient treatment, detox inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment services, and as well as recovery supports, peers, having the recovery centers, you know, provide virtual and at times in-person programs, and really continue to support individuals along the full continuum of their care.
You've answered this question a little bit, but what accomplishments are you most proud of in this unusual year?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, the resiliency of the recovery community has been astounding. You know, I remember my last, you know, and I engage in 12-step mutual aid meetings. And I remember as, you know, as COVID was really starting to pick up and, you know, we were talking about, you know, knowing that that our in-person meetings would probably be shut down. The way in which the recovery community has continued to stay connected and engaged is mind-boggling. The virtual Zoom meetings, while it's not the same as in person, I mean, you know, there have been meetings that pre-COVID, you know, we had, you know, maybe 20 people in the meeting, right, jammed into a little church basement, right? And then, you know, with the onset of COVID, you know, we had people Zooming into meetings. One of the meetings that I go to in Hudson, where, you know, we would have people from Ireland and, you know, Germany and South Africa, you know, like all these people that were, you know, meeting each other through the virtual world. So I think that the way in which the recovery community has really stepped up, the way in which our heroic providers, you know, who have been working and their staff have been working in just, you know, incredibly stressful, exhausting conditions, have continued and putting their lives at risk, quite frankly, and providing services and going above and beyond to help folks access care has been astounding to me. The way in which, you know, the folks at the state agencies that I partner with, who were working around the clock to try to, you know, this changing landscape and build, you know, guidance and regulations around, you know, meeting the needs of our folks, has just, you know, just inspired me to no end. And, you know, the peers that are literally in, you know, in communities on a daily basis, pulling people, you know, out of the gutter, out of, you know, despair, and being that lifeline until we could be able to, you know, get them into appropriate levels of care. All of those accomplishments of the community that I've been able to witness and, you know, and be a part of have just, you know, been extraordinary. And in the last, you know, couple of months watching the new administration come in and, you know, seeing recovery literally embedded, you know, in the lexicon, at the tables, you know, at places where, you know, decision making matters. You know, we have, you know, friends at ONDCP who are already today there was an issue, you know, a policy change that I've been, you know, has been near and dear to my heart that we were pushing for during the last administration and absolutely made no headway. And now SAMHSA released, you know, guidance that fentanyl testing strips can now be used with federal funds to test, you know, drugs for individuals who, you know, we want to keep people alive, right? So, you know, being able to utilize harm reduction, you know, evidence-based harm reduction practices that keep people alive so that they don't die before we can get them the message of hope. It's just beyond extraordinary. And those are things that, you know, fill me with, you know, excitement and gratitude and, you know, and the reality that we're, you know, we're in a new day now. And there's hope and healing available to people.
You mentioned the word community. How can your work help our local community? What can the, you know, what can the Ombudsman, the New York State Behavioral Health do to help people in the Catskills in this region? And then also, what can we do for you? What action can we take?
So, love those two questions. So let me take the first question. I mentioned that, you know, CHAMP, which is the Ombudsman, you know, the acronym for the project that, you know, I work with our partners on, which is called the CHAMP, stands for the Community Health Access to Addiction and Mental Health Care Project. And I mentioned to you that we have a helpline that folks can call Monday through Friday, 9 to 4. That number is 888-614-5400. And folks can also, you know, contact me. I work sort of, you know, I work, you know, crazy hours. So if you need help in the evenings and on weekends, I'm available. And my email address is stephanie.campbell@oasas.ny.gov. But folks can also, you know that, you know, there are, you know, there's also the New York State COVID-19 Emotional Support Helpline. So if folks are experiencing anxiety or stress or depression, you know, during this time, they can reach, you know, that number, and I can give you that number as well. The New York State COVID-19 Emotional Support Helpline is 844-863-9314. Again, that's 844-863-9314. And also, there's, you know, there's resources for folks to look at to get access to treatment. And I can send you some of those links. There's also, you know, family support services and peer support services. Folks can go on to the OASIS website to get more information on those resources. And just folks should know that, you know, there's help that's available, services both on the substance use and mental health side that are offered through telehealth. And that they can get that using the phone if they're in an area, more rural area, like Sullivan County and the Catskills, where sometimes coverage is, challenging. So there are lots of resources, but certainly, that's one way that that we can provide support to you. In terms of your second question, what can you do to help me? I'm sort of a hybrid at the state agencies. I work with, again, a number of state agencies to identify what we call sentinel issues, those issues that are really creating barriers to our folks getting the care that they need. And, you can help me by letting me know when these things are happening. If you're, experiencing a problem in community, I will do whatever I can to try to help find the right people to connect with to try to address those issues. I feel, and I say this all the time, if I live to be 100, I will never pay back the debt of people who reached out and helped me when I was sick and suffering. And every day that I'm given the opportunity to help our community, to help, individuals and families that are struggling with either active, use or struggling in their recovery journey. If I can connect folks to supports and services, that's a good day for me. So I hope that answers your question.
One quick last question. We've only got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, Stephanie. Who are your heroes? Who are the people you would like us to know about? Did I lose you?
No, I'm right here. That's a beautiful question. I have so many heroes. I have... the folks that came before me in the recovery movement, that really helped me learn how to, articulate, and advocate for our community. I have a mentor who many of you, you've had on your show, before, this mentor, Rob Kent, is now over, at ONDCP, and he's my heart. He's my brother. He's another person that really, doesn't identify as a person in recovery per se, but is an ally. I have people who literally, Joe Turner is a friend of mine who runs a program called Exponents down in New York City and has been in recovery for many, many years and is a harm reductionist. There are people in community that I'm working with right now and have been working with on advocacy. When you start naming names of people, that's a problem, but also family members. Bill, you're one of my heroes. Meeting you and hearing you, your story about the loss of your son, and the courage and determination that you have, have exhibited in the advocacy work that you do. My friend Linda Ventura, Avi Israel, Terry Kroll. There are countless. Donna, I mean, there are just so many people who continue to inspire me and teach me on a daily basis, how to best support our community. They're my heroes.
Thanks.
You're my heroes.
I'm sorry if I'm interrupting you. I think we're running out of time. We're going to hand it back over to Jason Dole at WJFF, and you have been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie, and thank you, Bill, for joining us live, and welcome back on the Kingfisher Project here on the Local Edition.
Thanks, Jason.
Have a good night. This is Radio Catskill. We're your community radio station. That was it. That was the local edition. And yes, welcoming back the Kingfisher Project. Information and destigmatization to fight the opioid pandemic. Support for this past hour came from Van Gorder's Furniture, featuring Lodge and Adirondack styles, as well as rustic collections with showrooms at Lake Wampatback, downtown Honesdale, and Milford, PA. Van Gorder's Furniture brings the outdoors inside. Van Gorder's